We welcome you to this ceremony in the naming of the Administration Building of the University of Florida, the John J. Tigard Hall. Normally, in the process of naming a building at the university, on the recommendation of a faculty committee and the University Senate, approval of the president, it is recommended to the Board of Control. After approval by the Board of Control, we formally notify the person being honored. In this particular instance, our beloved, esteemed, and distinguished subject was formally notified that we would be satisfied with nothing less than to hold a ceremony in his honor. And for that purpose, we are here assembled. We have asked one of our splendid professors who has served under Dr. Tigard, a member of the Board of Control who worked diligently with him during his administration, a representative of his alma mater, and a former student who is now the distinguished chairman of the Board of Control to be with us this morning. Doctor, before introducing the first one to appear to bring greetings to Dr. Tigard, I should like to ask you to rise for the invocation.
Almighty and ever-blessed God, from whom cometh every good and perfect gift, make us worthy of our heritage in this home of learning. We thank thee for men of character and sound learning who through the years have charted the course of this university. We are especially grateful to thee at this hour for this completed building of administration, which bears the name now and through the coming years of a great public servant and a well-beloved friend. We praise thy name for his illustrious leadership in the nation and in this community and commonwealth, for high and holy influences in his home and training, for his honesty and unswerving loyalty to duty, for his steadfastness and patience in trial and disappointment, and for all good and gracious qualities in his life, which have endeared him to us and have made the world a better place because of his presence in it. We thank thee for the foundations of this university, which he laid firm and strong. And we are grateful for that great company of youth who on this campus have been inspired by precept and example of thy servant, who now enrich and strengthen our country and the world in their several lives and callings. We humbly beseech thee to guide the present administration of this university, the president and all others associated with him in these days of great decision. Save our people from the besetting sins of sloth and self-indulgence and from conceit and vainglory. Make us diligent and loyal in thy service and an honor to our state and university. And may each of us grow up to the limit of his powers in the service of him who came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Amen.
We thank you, Dr. Garden, for being with us this morning. And may I at this time recognize to you the wonderful service that you have rendered in this community for almost as many years, I believe, as from the time that Dr. Tigard arrived in Gainesville. Dr. Charles Archibald Robertson, a native of Florida, a graduate of this institution where he took his graduate work as well as at Harvard University, who holds the honorary degree of Doctor of Literature, heads one of the finest departments on the University of Florida, the Department of English. A Phi Beta Kappa, a Shakespearean, who has been on this faculty with slight interruption for over 40 years. It is indeed a pleasure to call upon Dr. Robertson, a cordial, genial, capable, and dedicated member of the faculty of the university.
Mr. President, Dr. and Mrs. Taggart, Mr. Chairman, and ladies and gentlemen, in this particular audience, I think I may claim the privilege of beginning with a personal reminiscence entitled On My First Acquaintance with Dr. John Taggart. Towards the middle of Dr. Taggart's first month on this campus, and rather early, one sunny September morning in 1928, the doorbell rang at our apartment, and we opened the door to an unexpected but very welcome visitor. It was the new president of the University of Florida, no less. There was something that Dr. Taggart needed to get done. It had something to do with English. At the moment, English had something to do with me, and Dr. Taggart was there to get it done. And it got done. Now, by no stretch of the imagination, could Dr. Taggart be expected to recall so tiny an incident. Yet it sticks vividly in my own many pleasant memories of him, because to my mind it illustrates some of the ways and traits that have always distinguished him here with us as man and as president. There was even a tiny sample of the elemental energy with which he sets about doing what he needs to do. There was the directness and candor with which he has always acted in all occasions, great or small, and there was, in the best sense of the word, the simplicity of his nature. No wonder then that he so quickly and so firmly impressed his powerful personality on this campus. And no wonder that he so enduringly commanded the loyalty of all those who worked with and for him. Some of us here had, as President Reitz has pointed out, had the great good luck to serve on the faculty throughout his tenure as president. For us, it would be very easy to draw a long list of the attributes and the achievements that have stamped Dr. Taggart's mark indelibly on the history and in the very fabric of this university. We remember well indeed the great statesmanship and the qualities of leadership, the patience and determination, the persistence when needed, the great energy and foresight that led to such things as the founding of the University College, and I think literally the preservation of liberal education in this university, the institution of the Office of the Dean of Men with all that that came to imply about our students and Dr. Taggart's concern for them, the installation of Phi Beta Kappa, the notable and rapid growth of the physical plant of the university, the winning of such things that meant the progress of this university as the first great foundation grant, the great sum devoted to the university library's upbuilding from the General Education Board in 1939 and 40. We remember, too, the courage and force with which he sent a gale of cleansing wind through the world of intercollegiate athletics. These are just a few of the things that he did. They are all the more remarkable, ladies and gentlemen, when we remember that they were done in genuinely parlous times. Those were the stressful days of the Great Depression and the hectic war years. They won him the lasting respect and the admiration of his students and his faculty. But in the long run, for us, it is the personal qualities that have counted the most, and it is for those that we long ago conceived for him and still hold a very deep personal affection. No one associated with Dr. Taggart can ever forget his warm humanity, the capacity for identifying himself with all faculty and student affairs, nor can one ever forget the racy picturesqueness of his very figure, especially that Tennessee tangy, twangy speech of his, so utterly uncontaminated by contact with Oxford University. His zest for sports and fair play. The generosity of spirit that made it possible, indeed invited us to differ, sometimes violently with him, and made it impossible for him to bear a grudge. The constant loyalty to his own associates, the utter integrity of his nature, and the honest respect for learning wherever he found it, whether it meant expertness in chemistry or in camellias or bell buckle Latin or in the accuracy of a quotation from Hamlet. In him, these add up to a largeness of nature, which is well symbolized in the largeness of his physical frame. So, Mr. President, of course, I am deeply grateful to you for giving me the privilege of representing his faculty and yours in this ceremony. And I congratulate the Board of Control on the rightness of your choice of a name for a splendid building. It now has a splendid name.
Thank you, Dr. Roberts. Raymer F. McGuire is another native Floridian. He was graduated from the University of Florida in 1915, and he is one of two alumni of this institution who have been president of the University of Florida Alumni Association, and one who have seen their son become president of the Alumni Association. Mr. McGuire served on the Board of Control from 1929 to 1934 and was chairman 1932-34. I believe he has known every member of the board during the period at least from 1930 to 1946. And I am sure that he has known every president of the University of Florida since the university was moved to Gainesville on the passage of the Buckman Act. Also, I am certain that he knows has known every president of the University of Florida Alumni Association since that association was organized. A distinguished citizen and lawyer, he's past president of the Florida Bar Association, received the Distinguished Service Award from the Florida Bar Association, and is a recipient of the Distinguished Alumni Award of the University of Florida. I could say much more about Mr. McGuire, however pleasant this might be to him and to all of us, but I know that he is most anxious to say something about the man we honor today, Mr. McGuire.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. President, Dr. Taggart, President Emeritus, gentlemen of the Board of Control, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I am not accustomed to speaking from notes, but under the circumstances of this particular case, it was essential to confine my remarks, because I could speak longer of Dr. Taggart than Castro could against the United States. I'm just out of the hospital, so if I don't stand up to par, why, you'll forgive me. When I received the invitation to participate in this great occasion, I knew that I would have to be limited in time. And while the invitation I received from your great and distinguished president did not directly say so, I was reminded of a letter I received from Gordon B. Knowles of Bradenton when I was invited to be a speaker in the fiscal year 1933-34 of the Alumni Association. He added a postscript, this cryptic statement: Raymer, for God's sake, make it short. It was not necessary because I'd observed the great power of condensation Dr. Taggart used in making his reports to the Board of Control, covering the many and various subjects, matters of the university. I know of no man who has greater power of condensation. I can illustrate this with one example. In 1911, he went to the University of Kentucky as head of the Department of Philosophy and Psychology, athletic director, and head coach, each of which would be a full-time job for any individual. Of him, I can say he was the greatest football sportsman I've ever known. I emphasize the word sportsman. Notwithstanding Dr. Taggart's great love for football, he universally required football players to keep their college grades in not less than second place. If they failed the subject, they had to make it up before they could resume playing football. I rarely met such a man. Have you ever known any man at a great university who headed the departments of philosophy, psychology, athletic director, and head coach? I never have. Among lawyers, you sometimes hear the expression, he's a natural-born lawyer. I can earnestly say that Dr. Taggart is a natural-born educator and creative administrator. I never knew in which field of endeavor he excelled. Born on the campus of Vanderbilt University, the grandson of Bishop Holland McTeer, he was a chairman of the board of, who was chairman of the Board of Trustees and chief executive officer beginning in 1875 until his death in 1889. As might be expected, Dr. Taggart was a graduate of Vanderbilt. There he earned his Phi Beta Kappa key. He received a second BA degree at Oxford University, England, from the Honor School of Jurisprudence. For that reason, I visited Oxford University on my first trip to England. His degree of LL.D. was awarded by the University of Minnesota. Time does not permit a recitation of his many other honor degrees in recognition of his outstanding ability as an American educator. He came to our university in 1928 from the High Office of Commissioner of Education of the United States. He was already a national figure in the field of education. He loved this university as a father loves a gifted son or daughter. From my personal knowledge, he had many offers to go elsewhere at greatly increased compensation, but he continued here until 1947, which is proof of his great love for this now great University of Florida. I came to the Board of Control in September of 1929. During my first 6 months on the Board of Control, I did far more listening than talking, if you are willing to believe that any lawyer can ever keep quiet. Though through that process, I made up my mind that Dr. Taggart was a man of unimpeachable integrity, a very great educator, as well as an unusual administrative officer. I can't speak against that noise. In those days, money appropriations for institutions of higher learning in this state were more difficult to come by than it is now for a funeral director to appear aggrieved at a $25,000 funeral, which he's conducting from his own establishment. Dr. Taggart contributed mightily to the following accomplishments. The Place University football, I'm talking now of a concrete building, stadium at an approximate cost of $125,000, all of which was derived from a private loan borrowed from the Florida National Bank of Jacksonville. Dr. Taggart induced 50 businessmen in Gainesville, then a small town as compared with the city of today, to guarantee the payment of $1,000 each of said loan of $125,000. The bank advanced the money in $10,000 installments as the work progressed. A corporation not for profit had been organized at the University of Florida with the approval of the Board of Control and the Attorney General of Florida, to which the stadium real property had been deeded. The seating capacity of that stadium was 22,800 spectators and now forms a part of our present great football stadium. The per seat cost of the stadium was the cheapest ever built by any state university in the United States up to that time. The state of Florida actually contributed $5,000, as I recall, to that structure. However, the great football teams of the University of Florida in 1928 and 1929 were among the best and collected large receipts from the Athletic Association in those days, for the Athletic Association in those days. This one administrative act was a Herculean achievement for any university president. During the biennium ending June 30, 1930, the graduate school was added to the University of Florida with Dr. J.N. Anderson as dean. And PhD degrees in chemistry and pharmacy were first offered. Pre-law courses were instituted in the College of Arts and Sciences. The School of Architecture was separated from the College of Engineering, and the faculty of the College of Law was increased to full-time 7 members. When I was here, I think they had 3. An outdoor swimming pool completed at a cost of $32,000. With these accomplishments to talk about, we were enabled to go before the legislature of 1931 and demonstrate conclusively that the University of Florida had cause to be saved and therefore produced more money than ever before and more than the total appropriations made by the legislature in the history of the University of Florida. But then it was extremely difficult to secure necessary appropriation to carry on the additional and necessary improvements, and to secure even reasonably adequate appropriation for teachers, professors, and heads of departments at the University of Florida. We would not have succeeded but for the enthusiastic and continuous support of Governor Carleton. We also went to bat in behalf of the institutions of higher learning in this state, but more particularly, he also went to the bat for the high institutions of learning in this state, more particularly the University of Florida. Our success before the legislature of 1931 enabled the immediate increase in salaries to at least provide a decent living compensation. And I can tell you right here and now, they never had it before. A new wing was added to the library. A contract was let for the construction of what is now Norman Hall, formerly named the P.K. Young School. Administration standards were tightened. Radio station WRUF of the University of Florida became affiliated with the Columbia Broadcasting System. The cafeteria was formally opened to the summer school of 1930 at a price of $18 per month board. Can you imagine that today? Dr. Taggart served on literally countless national and international committees on education. About this time, Dr. Taggart became a member of the Board of Trustees of Vanderbilt University, in which capacity he continues to serve. In this talk with you, I've limited myself primarily to those things of which I have personal knowledge, but I can truthfully add that whether by coincidence or otherwise, the University of Florida has always had great presidents, far greater than we deserve for the amount of money we've been able to pay. We must not forget that during the period of 1900 to 1939, in any event, Florida was not the very rich state that it is today. If time permitted, I might recite many other great achievements by this great educator, Dr. John J. Taggart. Suffice it to say that as a builder of the university, he may on some occasion be equal, but he will never be surpassed. It would not be appropriate for me to close my remarks about Dr. Taggart without an expression of appreciation of his devoted wife, the most talented diplomat I've ever known. Ladies and gentlemen, I count it a great personal pleasure, indeed a distinguished honor, to appear on this program at the dedication ceremony of the John J. Taggart Hall, this great administrative building of the University of Florida. Thank you.